Classics and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. President Trump on federal worker resignations, including more than 400 at the Department of Homeland Security.
75,000 is a lot of people, and we paid them well. You know, we gave them a lot of months of severance pay, if you call it that.
After Justice Department officials resign over an order to drop the corruption case against New York Mayor Eric Adams, the DOJ asks a court to dismiss the charges. Tom Dupree served in George W. Bush's DOJ.
Well, it's reminiscent of the Nixon era, where you saw the president basically try to find someone who would carry out his orders in the Justice Department.
Wildfire-stricken Southern California is drying out from the strongest storm of the season. 7 inches of rain fell in some places, unleashing dangerous debris flows. CBS's Carter Evans in Malibu.
Cars partially buried in mud. A firefighter swept by a torrent of water into the Pacific Ocean. The roof of a supermarket caving in. Remarkably, with all of this, there were no injuries.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
The Badgers prepare for Purdue. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's college basketball, big game for Wisconsin tomorrow, taking on number 7th-ranked Purdue in West Lafayette. Tip-off at noon, the Badgers have surpassed preseason predictions. Head coach Greg Gard on the Jim Rome Show.
If I had said to you back then, in the middle of February, you would be in the top 15 or 16, what would you have said?
I would have said our plan has come together in terms of how we wanted to put this roster together, and more importantly, a credit to our players of how they perform.
Marquette on the road at Villanova a week from tonight. The Golden Eagles ranked 18th in the nation. NBA, the All-Star game this weekend in San Francisco. 25 years ago, Damian Lillard's father took him to the All-Star game as a 9-year-old growing up in Oakland.
So now to be, like you said, 25 years later, and this being my 9th All-Star game, and kind of back in front of that hometown crowd, you know, it's definitely a special moment.
That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Hey, everybody. Glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Republicans are standing up. Republicans are standing up to Donald Trump. The nation could be saved. Democracy could be saved. That's right. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. She has announced a piece of legislation to rename North America's highest mountain Denali. It's what it was a couple of weeks ago. But evidently, she's not happy. And neither is the junior senator from Alaska, Dan Sullivan. He's a co-sponsor of the bill. They want to rename it Denali after Trump's executive order to change it to back to Mount McKinley. Yeah, this is the extent of the... this is the extent of the steeled spine by Republicans. Because meanwhile... while the assault on democracy continues, the purge continues. Remember Project 2025? Remember we talked about Schedule F? Remember we talked about all of the making patronage great again? Remember that? Well, yeah, we're doing that because evidently on Thursday you had leaders from the Office of Personnel Management meet with all the agency heads and direct them to fire anyone in their probationary period. Because if you work for the government, I think it's like a year or two before you get, could be even three if I'm not mistaken, but you have a long probationary period. Anyone in that, gone. To the curb with you, slash and burn. And then they're going to come back with the schedule left to get rid of people who have been there a while so that they can gut anyone doing their job. Understand that anyone doing their actual job will be removed. Also, you had a judge, federal judge on Thursday, blocked two parts of two executive orders that Trump pushed through. They were the ones on gender-affirming care, but U.S. District Judge Brendan Hernson, he concluded that, you know what, these groups of trans and LGBT folks, yeah, they got a claim. You know, probably going to hurt somebody, and it's probably unconstitutional. It's probably illegal. So blocked it temporarily. Also, another judge blocked the birthright citizenship, I think the fourth now. Also, you have the feds, the Justice Department, dropping charges against Vince McMahon because evidently there were a lot of sexual misconduct allegations going on. Now, you know, with his wife being confirmed as Secretary of Education, you can't have an abuse. Well, that's not true. Look at this administration. But it doesn't look good to have the person who's the head of the Department of Education having a spouse who's a serial abuser and not abuser, accused of a slew of sexual misconduct allegations. Allegations, because now it's off the books. They're just now allegations. And we're never going to get to a trial phase to find out whether they're true or not. There you go. And then all the stuff with Eric Adams. Have you been following this Eric Adams thing where the border czar meets with his people about getting into Rikers Island? And wow. All I can say is wow. The back scratching is at a fevered pitch. The quid pro quo, fevered pitch. The abuse of power, again, way out there. But here's the thing, and this is for all those people going, oh my gosh, we didn't know. Bull. Yeah, I'm going there. Bull. I'm calling it. Bull. We told you. You knew this was what, and some people wanted this. There are some, not many. There are some that wanted this kind of chaos. There are some who wanted this kind of pain and suffering and I can only think it's one of two reasons. One, your heart's just filled with hatred and you want to see chaos and suffering. And two, you just don't care about this country. You know, the number of emails I've gotten of people going, I didn't know this was going to happen. This isn't what I wanted. I just wanted cheaper eggs. I wanted a better job. I wanted the economy to get a little bit better. Only to find that, well, no, it's not. And all this stuff, this craziness, it's only going to get worse. And then it's going to stop. When there's no one left to stand up or speak out, and we are fully in the throes of a fascist authoritarian leader, it'll stop. Now, the question is will it get better or will it get worse? I know for some, Musk and his minions, it's going to get a whole lot better. They're going to get a whole lot wealthier. And you and me, the people who work for a living, the people who pay the taxes and do all this stuff, we're the ones going to get fleeced. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Will Bunch when we come back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently Thursday was the mass firing day. This is kind of Nixonian firings. A lot of people going, evidently, and done in the classiest way possible, via email. People at the Department of Education, the Small Business Administration, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, all of them got emails. Also in the firing, all of the military services, the people who were on the boards of visitors at the four military academies, gone as well. Because they're, as Trump put it, they're woke leftist ideologues. And he's going to make, I don't know, some nonsense. I'm here to share some thoughts on the firing Thursday and where the country's going. I've asked my good friend Will Bunch to come share some thoughts with. Will is a national columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, hey, Rick. Hey, I mean, it's like if Richard Nixon, it's like Richard Nixon, but if Haldeman and Ehrlichman had email in 1973, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
What goes around comes around.
And if they were able to come up with a catchy little word like woke.
Yeah. We call that branding, you know. That's their brand, right? Anti-woke. But I mean I'm calling this I have a hunch this phrase is going to catch on by the end of the night, but I mean what we're seeing right now is the Thursday afternoon massacre. Although there's two different kinds though. There's the horrible, unfortunate mass firings that Trump and the Doge boys and Musk are trying to pull off, which is just horrible. The story I'm following, which I think you may or may not have alluded to, but I mean is a positive story so far, we'll see how it plays out, is the the acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, this Danielle Sassoon, not to be confused with Adele Sassoon, but Danielle Sassoon resigning rather than follow orders from the Trump crew that's installed itself at the Justice Department, refusing to dismiss this criminal indictment against the mayor of New York, Eric Adams. And in short order, not only did she resign, but it's interesting, is she basically accused this Emile Bove, who used to be Trump's attorney and is now, I think, the number three person at the Justice Department. She's basically accusing Bove of this quid pro quo that we all thought was happening, but she's out there making this allegation, right, that basically Adams' lawyers said, well, you know, if you want us to enforce Trump's, you know, mass deportation immigration plan, he couldn't possibly do this with this indictment hanging over his head, could he, you know? And she's fired off an email accusing them of quid pro quo. Bobe fires back an email accusing her of, you know, crazy nonsense stuff that Trump. Meanwhile, other prosecutors now apparently are resigning. They wanted to switch the case to Washington and have its public integrity, I think, section take over the case and dismiss the charges against Mayor Adams, and they wouldn't do it either. And a couple people there may have resigned, and maybe some more people have resigned. So, I mean, it all brings back just amazing memories to me of 1973 and Nixon. And I was a 14-year-old kid, but I was a 14-year-old geek, you know, who was obsessed with the Watergate scandal at that age. And so, you know, I remember being glued to our family's chintzy, cheap little black and white TV that we had in 1973, waiting for, Garrick Utley and NBC News to come on with their special bulletins telling the latest of what happened. And I guess I lived long enough to see it happen all over again. But, just one last point quickly is, what's really interesting about this story is, this Danielle Sassoon, somebody standing up to Trump and these illegal orders that are taking place. We've been wondering, where's the spine? Where's the backbone? Who's gonna fight back? And we saw a little bit of that today, and it kind of gives you hope that not everybody's going to bend the knee, not everybody's going to roll over, and maybe
not everybody will, but most. And this is the part that's infuriating me is that most we're not hearing the kind of outrage that I would expect. Let me phrase this differently. Is it that we're not hearing it because it's not there, or is it we're not hearing it because our media structure is so badly broken and kowtowing so badly to this administration that no one's saying anything?
The mainstream media, which I'm nominally a part of myself, but is pretty badly broken at this point. It seems like, the major either because they're just totally compromised, by their owners, which is what we're seeing at the Washington Post and certainly at the LA Times, which is a once major paper that's gone off the deep end. And some of these other news, and certainly these TV networks that are racing to settle these defamation cases with Trump and throw money at him, all of them are kowtowing. And some of it is just, the New York Times, their owners don't owe anything to Trump or whatever, but they're just kind of doing it out of institutional fear. It's just not their nature, really, to challenge authority. The one thing, and I've always told people this for years, but I've never seen it more true than it is now, is, journalism is a lot like the sport of baseball, right? Because if journalism were a sport, it would be baseball. And the reason why I say that is because it's a team sport, but it's also an individual sport, right? So you could play for the worst team. You could get traded to the 2024 Chicago White Sox, which is just one of the historically worst teams of all time in any sport. But you personally could be a 400 hitter, you're up there by yourself. And that's kind of the way journalism is. There are individuals, a few of them work for the big mainstream outlets. Some of them are on their own with Substacks or newsletters or whatever. And there are some people out there who are killing it right now. I'll mention a couple. One is a journalist named Marissa Kabas, K-A-B-A-S, who's just an independent journalist. She's got her own newsletter called The Handbasket, I believe. And she does it from her apartment in Brooklyn. And she's the one who broke the story of Musk going in, taking over OMB and like freezing all federal payments, which, eventually was stopped by a judge once it had been exposed. And it was exposed by her. And she's broken a couple other big stories. Take a look at the publication Wired magazine, which has been around for a long, long time. Obviously, their focus has been big tech, Silicon Valley. And it turns out, in the age of the Elon Musk co-presidency, knowing your way around Silicon Valley is a way to get scoops. Particularly a reporter they have, Victoria Elliott, is a young woman. Her specialty is covering disinformation, and the old-fashioned political reporters are still taking their sources to the Capitol Grill, hoping for these access scoops look ridiculous compared to these young people who are covering it from the outside, basically. No. So there is some hope for journalism, but not for corporate journalism.
But in the meantime, here we are with all of this chaos. Here we are with an administration that no rules matter. And look, I know that administrations come and they go and they fire people and that happens. but never in my experience to this level. Because, you know, when I said this is unprecedented, I had some people go, well, you know, Bill Clinton did it, and Barack Obama did it, and Joe Biden did it. I go, yeah, but not to this extent.
Yeah, I mean, I just today I read an absurd column in the Washington Post from one of their conservative columnists trying to say that, well, you know, Obama had this task force and he brought in some people from Silicon Valley to try and make the government more efficient. You know, there's no comparison. Those people weren't violating laws the way that Musk's team is. You know, these agencies are funded by Congress. They're authorized by Congress. There's both laws and also a lot of legal precedent that's in place that you can't just by fiat get rid of these agencies or get rid of all the people who work there, which is why, you know, if you remember the 2020 big lie about election fraud, if you remember, Trump went basically 0-for-50 other than like one technical victory, but basically he went 1-for-51 in court cases in the 2020 election, right? And he's approaching that record this time. He's lost almost every case. And really the whole ballgame for democracy and you know, constitutional government
is the Roberts Court.
Yeah, well,
I
didn't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry. But two things are going to happen, right? Either some of this is going to go to the Supreme Court and we'll see what they'll do, number one. Or, I mean, the other possibility, which is more and more being discussed out in the open, is that, you know, courts will order them to cease and desist, and they won't. They'll ignore the court orders. And then, the famous Andrew Jackson quote about, you know, let the justice enforce this, there are reasons why Trump has moved pretty quickly to try and cement his control at the Pentagon and get Pete Hegseth, who's a total lackey, in there. And certainly there's going to be a push, I think, to get rid of some of these generals, because if push comes to shove, you know, if Trump ignores court orders, the only thing is left is the kind of the South Korea option, right? For people to go out in the streets, climb over the fences, try and get in the Capitol, I know it's kind of January 6th in Rivers.
Yeah, but,
right?
but understand, the left is not that country. We're not that country.
Yeah, I mean, well, right. I mean, A, that's probably not going to happen in the first place. But even if some other protest that's maybe short of what they did in South Korea or, you know, Ukraine in 2014 or whatever, you know, even some other protest, you know, it could very well be met by tanks that Trump has called out with his control of the military. And then, you know, I mean, the only consolation at that point is nobody can argue anymore that this isn't a dictatorship. But I mean,
are we still arguing that?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it feels like it already is. I mean, anybody who says, oh, well, it doesn't feel like we're in a dictatorship. I mean, yeah, I mean, sure, we're having the Super Bowl and the Grammys and all that stuff. And, you know, we're driving around in our cars and stuff, and it's not, we're not watching, you know, jackbooted thugs marching down our residential street yet, you know, but I feel like I live in a dictatorship. I do, you know, I mean, I'm seeing so many people who are afraid or they're constrained in what they feel they can say, or, you know, I mean, as a journalist, I reach out to people who normally might have a strong comment on these things, and it's like, well, we really don't want to comment.
No, I get a lot of that myself.
Because they're afraid. I mean, it's horrible.
And, you know, the weird thing is, you know, years ago, the people that Trump would be tapping to take these key positions wouldn't even been a consideration on any level, because they're the worst people. I mean, I look at the story you just came out with, I think it was yesterday. This Sean Parnell, who ran for Senate here in Pennsylvania, aborted his campaign because of some really ugly allegations by his wife. Again, accused of assault and abuse,
that he had tried to choke her, that
all kinds of stuff, and now part of the administration.
Children.
We're going to make it part of the administration.
Yeah, I mean three. I mean, you know, what was different between? I mean, we're just talking about just three years ago, right? And just over 3 years ago, in November 2021, when all that stuff came out about his marriage and his abuse. His pattern of abuse, it was enough where he had to drop his Senate campaign immediately because it was just untenable in 2021. Today, he gets named the chief spokesman for the Pentagon. So every time, you know, if there's, you know, heaven forbid, if there's some military action, you know, if there's, you know, something going on in Taiwan or whatever, and we're all turning on our TVs to see what the Pentagon has to say about this, it's going to be this guy, Sean Parnell, up there.
Amazing. You know what's amazing? You know what's amazing to me, Will, is we lived through the whole Q thing. And I haven't heard a lot from the Q kooks lately. I think they've burrowed a little bit underground. But it was all about, you know, abusers and pedophiles and all of, you know, the worst kind of people. That's who they were fighting for. And yet their efforts filled our government with pedophiles, abusers, and wife beaters.
But I guess Republican ones are okay. They're not from Hollywood, or they're not, you know, they're not liberal Democrats. But I mean, come on. This thing is so ridiculous. But Rick, I mean, you and I are old enough to remember, like, you know, Gary Hart just being photographed once coming out of the apartment of a woman who wasn't his wife. Derailed his entire presidential campaign. You know, I mean, the things that, which you can debate about whether it should, I mean, it probably shouldn't have, but that's what happened. I'm not saying that was good in a way, but I'm just saying in terms of times have changed, we've almost gone from being too prudish about, the way our political leaders can live their lives to this absurd situation where you can be, you know, called out in court as a wife beater and still get this incredibly important high level government post.
Well, no, I look at these people and then they hide behind their religion and the Ten Commandments, and they carry the Ten Commandments around with them everywhere to go, not as a reminder of things not to do, but as a checklist of things they haven't done yet.
Well, yeah, but you know, but there's also a philosophy, which, you know, I personally would call this philosophy misogyny myself, but you know, they would call some of this, I don't know, men's rights, right? You know, I mean,
what better right, Will, than to just grab her by the you know what?
Right, it's that they think that's what's in the Bible. That's their idea of what they think is in the Bible, right? You know, Parnell, as I wrote in the column, has a very active, Twitter X feed, and his pinned tweet. So it's the first thing anybody sees who goes to his feed is about how now a judge has given him more custody rights with his kids. And, you know, no apology for what he did, or for the way he acted. It's, you know, it's like family court is hell, and this is what men have to go through. And, it's like the old Saturday Night Live skit about the rape hotline, but it's a rape hotline for men where they can commiserate how bad they're treated when they're accused of rape. You know, I mean, it's really on that level. And but that's the world they're trying to bring back, reimpose. You know, I mean, you know, it's the patriarchy on steroids, right? It's this. You know, it's they're getting rid of DEI. They're taking books like with this Pete Hegseth running the Pentagon for the last two or three weeks or last couple of weeks. They're like taking books out of military school libraries that are like biographies of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's considered like propaganda now to talk about a successful woman. You know, they're taking women's pictures off the walls. They're scrubbing websites of achievements by women soldiers.
They're simply rewriting history. And you know, what keeps being thrown back at me, Will, is, you know, when Democrats take charge, why don't they do this? You know, why aren't we doing the same thing? Why aren't we taking Ronald Reagan's name off everything? Why aren't we undoing all the horrible? And policy-wise, they got a point. I don't know about the rest of it, but policy-wise, Democrats never seem to snap back. And I worry that, you know, even if Democrats take power in 2 years and then the White House in 4 years, all of the horrible stuff that they're doing, a lot of it's going to stick. That's my concern. But, Will, as always, I appreciate the work that you do over at the Philly Inquirer. It's all great stuff. You are one of my favorite reporters, one of my go-to guys. I appreciate the time.
Wow, that really means a lot. Thanks for saying that. And thanks for having me on.
Anytime. Look forward to the get real
time. I'll be back.
Thanks so much, our good friend Will Bunch. And look, you know, as I said, I'm concerned that a lot of this stuff does stay. And, well, Democrats, spine, find one. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For tonight, snow will come down. It could be heavy at times, and we'll pick up about 3 to 5 inches of accumulation, maybe more in pockets, low around 15. For Saturday, snow before noon, then cloudy skies and a high near 27. Sunday's high around 15. Currently 17 degrees.
The excitement.
Oh, he stones Brodzinski with a glove save.
The energy.
What's he going to do? He shoots and he scores.
The tradition.
You've got to understand history if you're ever going to write your own.
It's everything.
He scores. Badgers answer right back.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Sponsored by Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep, Econ Electric, and 8th Street Auto. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, streaming live and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So first it was firing a board member at the NLRB, and now you've got another board member fired at the FLRA, the Federal Labor Relations Authority. And again, this is another one of those things where you go, yeah, five people have been fired before, but not these people. This is that next level that we told you during the campaign Trump was going to do. We're going to make patronage great again. And all across this, it's got the little Doge boys and his ferrets, their fingers all over it. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on and dig into all of this, I've asked my good friend Michael Sonato to come talk with us. Michael's a labor reporter with The Guardian US. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on again, Rick.
So another firing. It's been Thursday was firing day. It's been firing week. There's been a lot of this going on. What do you make of this firing at the Federal Labor Relations Authority?
It's just another brazen overreach by the executive branch. So this hasn't happened before. The most similar case happened in the 30s. FDR fired an EEOC chair commissioner he didn't like. That was a holdover from the Coolidge administration. The Supreme Court ruled that he couldn't do that. So that's the precedent that Trump is completely ignoring. So these are just, unlawful. These are independent agencies. These people were appointed by the Senate. So this was congressional authority to put these people in their position. The president doesn't have the power to remove these people, these people in these positions. The NLRB board member, Gwen Wilcox, filed a lawsuit challenging her removal. I haven't seen yet if this FLRA chair is going to challenge her removal, but the same rules apply as it does to the NLRB board. They can only be removed by a president for negligence or misconduct, and that wasn't even alleged. It was the White House's claim, as they want everyone to join with Trump to make America great again. And
loyalty pledge.
You're not on board, they're going to kick you out.
Loyalty pledge. Loyalty pledge. Look, you know, this is what authoritarian rulers do. Kiss the ring, take the pledge, or you get fired. And look, you know, a court may decide, you know, they were illegally fired, unconstitutionally fired. But I don't think it's going to matter, because I don't think Trump's going to listen to our courts. I think we're already post court. I think we're post checks and balances. I think Trump is going to do whatever he wants, however he wants. And there's nobody, his party especially, going to hold him in check.
No, I agree. That's what we've been seeing, is, you know, courts have been ruling against him and they've just been ignoring those decisions. So the courts can't act fast enough. And, you know, their authority, their rulings aren't being, enforced. And there are no Republicans in power. They hold the majority in the Senate and the House who have, you know, an inkling of standing up to that overreach of the executive power. And he's been pushing it, and it looks like he's going to continue to push it as far as he can until forces push them to stop or guardrails. So it's a scary time. We don't know what's going to happen over the next few weeks, months on all these fronts, but it's certainly very disturbing to watch it unfold.
Well, there is a small crack. There is a small crack in the armor. Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, she's introduced a piece of legislation to rename Mount Denali, that's been executive ordered, renamed Mount McKinley back to Denali. We've got, there's someone standing up.
we'll take modicums of resistance where we can get them, I guess.
That's it. You know, while all hell's breaking loose and the dumpster's on fire, you know, we're going to save the used, never mind. How important is this Federal Labor Relations Authority? How important is this position for working people? Because, look, during the campaign, I was telling my union brothers and sisters, look, this guy's been terrible for labor. He was terrible for labor in his first term. He's going to even be more aggressively terrible for unions and for workers. How important is this position?
It's incredibly important for federal workers. That's who they oversee, non-postal federal employees. So, at one front, federal workers are getting harassed, intimidated, bullied into resigning, having all these changes implemented willy-nilly, policies, their contracts violated right and left. All the probationary employees that have been fired, we don't have a number yet, but that just happened a couple last night. They're just being attacked on all fronts. So, unfair labor practice charges, grievances, contract battles, all of these things that unions, would normally go through with the FLRA to have resolved. There's nothing's going to happen on that front. And it's just going to cause, further delays. I mean, at this point, for federal workers in the private sector, labor law, you can still file charges, file for union elections, but there's not a quorum to enforce it. So, and we've already seen employers start to take advantage of that with Whole Foods, the first union store to win the election, Amazon, which owns them. Argued that they object to the election results. They can't accept them because there's not enough board members on the board.
And that was by design. Look, ultimately, you cripple the ability of workers to organize. And now I've got friends who are like, well, the NLRB isn't that important. The NLRA is dead. It's ossified. It doesn't work in today. We've got to build a new worker power. And I'm like, yeah, I agree. 100% agree in the idea of building militant worker power. But if you don't have some government assistance, you just get locked up a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was put there for a reason, and obviously there were some negative impacts for it. We've seen over the past few decades union destiny and all the union busting. But I mean, these were basic enforcers of labor law rights, and they were a check, not as effective as, you know, what we would like to see. But they were still a check to that power, and that's removed it. So this doesn't help workers. This helps employers. It helps union busters. You know, it helps the wealthy that don't want to recognize workers' rights.
Now I look at, and again, I keep going back to the campaign, because you know we were very clear during the campaign that Trump was going to, and Republicans were going to do everything they could do to break unions, to make unions illegal again. They were going to do it. And I had all my union friends go, no, you're just being hyperbolic. And I point to Utah, which does not have the highest union density. But even in a place like Utah, with a fairly low union density, they have moved to ban collective bargaining for cops and firefighters and teachers and public sector workers. We're waiting on the governor to see which way this goes. But it did pass the Senate 16-13. And I love the framing of, you know, why this bill passed. It's because the unions, well, they couldn't come to a consensus on if they wanted to lose, you know, both legs, or, you know, one and a half legs, or, you know, just one leg and an arm. They couldn't decide. So we're going to take everything, I guess, was the decision.
It's very concerning, especially because, you know, in the public sector, it has such a high union density compared to the public's, you know, the private sector. So that's where, you know, a lot of the union strongholds are within public employees. And I think, you know, this is, you know, at least one of the first instances where police and firefighters, you know, you look at like right to work laws and all these anti-union laws in states across the country, usually they're written out or exempted. Even in Trump's executive orders targeting federal workers with the hiring freeze and the, oh, you have to, you can only hire one if you get rid of every four workers, you know, all the police, military, you know, those people were exempted from those policies. So to the fact that the Utah Republicans are so brazen and so anti-union that they're not even considering that, I think it says a lot about where these policies are coming from. And what we've seen in states across the U.S. is they do not occur in a vacuum. So if, you know, whoever, whatever right-wing anti-union interest helped push this bill to get passed in Utah, I can bet you they're doing the same thing to try to repeat it in wherever states they can. So.
No, look, this is the beginning of what we see coming down the road, as you pointed out. Any word whether Utah Governor Spencer Cox is going to sign this? Because I haven't heard one way or another. Do you have any sense?
I do not have a sense yet, unfortunately. So, you know, I'm not very optimistic in doing that. And, you know, even if he does veto it, you know, where does that leave it? And whether it gets overrided by the state senate and house, or you know, they just come up, you know, with a different bill. So why would he, you know, based on, you know, whatever reason he comes up with an excuse, if he happens to veto it? But it doesn't look promising.
No, none of this stuff ever does get to that point. But I do have to get your thought, because, you know, we're seeing all of these firings. We're seeing all of the attacks on labor that you and I have talked about, that during the campaign we said were coming. And look, Trump was always an anti-labor guy. He, in New York, where you had to use union labor, he was good to them because he had to be. But everywhere else, slime bag. But this next level, this seems like, even for Trump, a next step. This seems like it's got Musk's fingers all over it. And you look at this Doge thing and the little ferrets that he's got running, little teenage ferrets he's got running through our government. This is something I think every person, red hat, blue hat, no hat, you should be concerned with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all know Elon Musk has, you know, held contempt for unions. He's gotten in trouble, faced a lot of scrutiny for union busting at Tesla, making anti-union statements, and he didn't like being told by the, you know, the labor board that he can't do that, that he has to delete a tweet. So, you know, it's very disconcerting. You know, his Trump's Secretary of Labor nominee, she may have supported the PRO Act, but given what everything else is going or what we're seeing with at the Department of Labor and just how workers are treated in general, it just doesn't, you know, show, you know, any promise. So I know, you know, the Teamsters took credit for that, and they've been really supportive of that nominee, but you know, that look at the fires around all of that. So I don't see how she is going to alleviate any of the rollbacks that we're seeing, whether it's you know, the joint employer rule, which, you know, their Amazon drivers were trying to you know, push through because they're you know, identified as third-party contractors, but Amazon didn't want to doesn't want them to unionize, doesn't want them to have those rights or have that liability, and, you know, all these different labor laws and just little rules, overtime rules, all of these things getting rolled back. And you know, I think we can all anticipate just the backlash to that, what's going to be enacted in their place. And it's going to be what we saw in the first Trump administration on steroids, with, you know, favoring employers and just the wish list of groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and other anti-union groups.
Yeah, but the Secretary of Labor nominee, you know, I gave Sean O'Brien, the Teamsters president, credit for it. You know, this is what you got. And when there was a picture of O'Brien, Trump, and former representative DeRemer, I said, you know, this picture is not going to age well, because, you know, the reality is all of this bad stuff is going to happen with or without her. So she's going to inherit what already is a mess, and by the time she gets in there, it's going to be even worse. And there's nothing she's going to be able to do to turn this ship around, because if she tries, they're just going to oust her.
Yeah, absolutely. And she's presiding over, you know, a Department of Labor who, even under the Biden administration, you know, all the leadership we're talking about, where they're understaffed, underfunded, you know, they're handling caseloads that are far beyond what, you know, that they can handle. And, you know, they're going to be reliant on a Congress and an administration that wants to cut in everything that they can and run everything on a skeleton budget, which, you know, these agencies were already doing and were already grappling with doing as much as they could with as little as possible.
But I want to go back to Elon Musk for a minute in this whole Doge thing, because, you know, I get a lot of emails from people going, well, you know, they found this. And, you know, fill in the blank with whatever this. Cats walking on treadmills seems to be the one. Or condoms. You know, we spent a gazillion billion dollars on condoms for foreigners. We shouldn't be doing that. And then when the reality, when the facts start to come out, nowhere close to what Musk said. And, in fact, in the Oval Office said, Musk said, you know, sometimes I'm going to be incorrect. Basically saying, hey, I'm going to lie to you. And millions of people are going to hear the lie. But when you fact check me, I'll throttle you. Nobody will ever hear it. But this idea that you're going to keep throwing you know what at us, and most of it's the majority, I'm going to go all of it, is going to be exaggerated, is going to be presented in the worst meme kind of light possible to get people to hate government, to get people to hate government action, and allow for this kind of corporate authoritarianism that I see coming as Trump and Musk. I do believe Musk thinks we're in a post-people kind of world, going to run the government with AI. They think robotics are going to replace us. Do you share the same kind of sense? Do you share the same kind of reality?
No, absolutely. Elon Musk, you know, the whole fraud and waste is just, you know, a facade. And just, you know, publicity thing. He's tweeting out just out of context, very vague claims of what they're finding. None of it's been proven to be fraud or anything. It's just something he ideologically disagrees with. On top of, you know, he's been bad at auditing his own companies. He's been fighting at Tesla for himself to get a salary of $50 billion a year that his own shareholders have been fighting against when Tesla only makes around $90 billion in revenue. That's not even profits. Their board of directors just had to settle a lawsuit in January for getting overpaid nearly $1 billion. That was because of a shareholder lawsuit as well. So you talk about all, you know, the whole just waste and fraud, just as ridiculous. And yeah, he's, you know, tweeted out completely debunked claims of what expenditures were made, like the $50 million condoms to Gaza, which was baseless, clearly proven. They've never taken ownership for that. There's been no transparency in what they're doing. He has immense conflicts of interest. You know, he's made over $20 billion through federal contracts. We just saw the Pentagon is you know, going to buy $400 million worth of cyber trucks. You know, for what? So
and why? Those see, look, yeah. Those are the most useless looking things I have ever seen. I've seen a couple drive down the road. I'm like, how do you move anything? Can you move a couch in that? Is that possible? That's not a truck. That's that thing we used to put together with blocks of wood, and you would carve off the ends. That's what that is.
Absolutely.
Soapbox cars. Oh, I'll tell you, we're in a really screwy place, and it's only getting worse. Last question I've got for you. What are we looking for in the coming days and weeks? Where's the next attack coming from?
You know, it's going to be hard to tell, but I think just as Doge has more time to get into more government agencies, as they try to figure out what they can either legally do, like they fired probationary employees, or trying to figure out ways to push people out, I think is the next thing. The resignation buyout offer, only 75,000 workers took that. You know, based on data for the past 8 years, around 200,000 federal workers leave, whether they resign voluntarily, retire, or quit a year. So, you know, federal workers I've talked to, they're very resilient. They want to keep doing the work. They don't want the easy way out. You know, they've claimed a lot of those workers are, you know, either remote workers or workers who thought they were going to be first on the chopping block and might as well get out while they can. So yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of resistance, and it's going to be a long fight for these workers and for federal worker unions.
I don't know that I would take it, simply because I all of the stories of Trump, you know, and Musk as well, stiffing people on what they owe them. Because as I understood, there was no guarantee that this was going to actually work out. There was the details were very sketchy, but you know, we'll see how it works out. But Michael, as always, great work over there at the Guardian US. Keep it up, and I hope you come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks, Rick.
Michael Sonato, labor reporter there at the Guardian US. Want to hear your thoughts. You okay with what Trump's doing? You okay with the assault on the federal workforce? You okay with Utah banning collective bargaining for public sector workers? And are you ready for it to come to your neighborhood? Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1818. That was the day that abolitionist Frederick Douglass chose to celebrate his birthday. He could not be sure of the exact date of his birth because he was born into slavery. He escaped from slavery and became one of the leading black writers and orators for the cause of abolition. After the Civil War, he continued to speak and write, demanding justice for African Americans and working people. For example,
example, in 1871, he penned an article against increasing demands for cheap labor. He wrote, "Cheap labor is a phrase that has no cheering music for the masses. Those who demand it and seek to acquire it have but little sympathy with common humanity. It is the cry of the few against the many." When we inquire who are the men who are continually vociferating for cheap labor, we find the rich and powerful, the crafty and scheming, those who live by the sweat of other men's faces, and who have no intention of cheapening labor by adding themselves to the laboring forces of society. It is the deceitful cry of the fortunate against the unfortunate. Labor is a noble word and expresses a noble idea. Today, we still face a demand for ever cheaper labor. Business leaders and their political friends fight against efforts to raise the minimum wage. From 2011 to 2015, 8 states scaled back their prevailing wage laws, 19 reduced pensions, and 15 eroded collective bargaining rights. As these attacks on working people grow, it seems that Frederick Douglass's reminder that labor is a noble word is needed now more than ever.
We plant the food, we drive the cab, we load the ship.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So after Thursday's mass firing, again, you know, I go back to the campaign. We said this was coming, so there's no surprise. There's no shock. You knew this was going to happen. But AFGE National President Everett Kelly released a statement saying that this administration has abused the probationary period to conduct a politically motivated, politically driven mass firing spree, targeting employees not because of performance, but because they were hired before Trump took office. He said these firings are not about poor performance. There is no evidence these employees were anything but dedicated public servants. They are about power. They are about gutting the federal government, silencing workers, and forcing agencies into submission to a radical agenda that prioritizes cronyism over competence. Kelly says despite OPM's guidance earlier this week advising agencies not to engage in sweeping terminations, the administration has plowed forward. Employees were given no notice, no due process, and no opportunity to defend themselves in a blatant violation of the principles of fairness and merit that are supposed to govern federal employment. He says agencies have spent years recruiting and developing the next generation of public servants by firing them en masse. This administration is throwing away the very talent these agencies need to function effectively in the years ahead. AFGE will fight these firings every step of the way. We will stand with every impacted employee, pursue every legal challenge available, and hold this administration accountable for its reckless actions. Federal employees are not disposable, and we will not allow the government to treat them as such. And look, you know, this is the reason that you join and form unions. This is the reason that you have the support. And this is why, understand, this is why Doge Boy and Trump and the rest of them are so vehemently anti-union, because there's someone going to stand up and fight them for doing whatever they want. They're used to having dictatorial powers, at-will powers. And when workers have the ability to say, we should have some security, so decent wages, decent benefits, yeah, they're not about that. So good on Everett Kelly and AFGE and the unions that are standing up and fighting this. They are the last line of saving our democracy. And look, they've been weakened by decades of Republican assaults. This is not new. It's just more public now. It's more brazen now. And look, you know, if you're a current union member right now, it's not long before it's you. First, they came for the public sector workers and you did nothing. And then they're going to come for you. And then they're going to come for everything else. OSHA,
federal wage laws, overtime, minimum wage. It's going to come for everybody. It's angering, it's frustrating, and I hope there's some outrage out there. But I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Is this something that gets under your skin? I want to hear it. Also, miss any portion of the program, podcast. And as always, thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Federal prosecutors in New York have filed a motion to drop corruption charges against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. CBS's Jake Rosen.
The motion to dismiss the 5-count indictment on corruption and fraud charges was filed on the court's public docket on Friday, saying the deputy attorney general has determined, pursuant to an authorization by the attorney general, that dismissal is necessary and appropriate. The judge overseeing the case must approve the motion before charges are officially dropped.
Danielle Sassoon, the acting U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, submitted her resignation to Attorney General Pam Bondi after being asked to drop the case against Adams. And several members of the Justice Department's Public Integrity Section in Washington have also resigned. More federal workers are being dismissed to comply with Trump administration plans, CBS's Eleanor Watson.
The individuals were part of the National Nuclear Security Administration within the Department of Energy, which is just the latest department to start firing probationary.